Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Do you believe that nice guys finish last? Nice gals finish last? Well, we're going to work with that theory and throw it right out the window because my guest today is Barry Bergman. This gentleman is, well, a demonstrator, if you will, of how nice guys... That's what we're going to be talking about today. Barry Bergman is on the air with us right now. Barry, welcome to the show.
It's nice to be with you, Don.
I became aware of you through Milton Kahn, and he was telling me about your material, and he said, Donna, what do you think about nice guys finishing first? I said, well, I believe in that. And he said, well, I think you're going to enjoy Mr. Bergman's material. And I absolutely have. If you could see the book, I've got so much highlighted in yellow, it's unbelievable. That's my favorite color when I'm reviewing books. But I really like what you had right off the bat in your book. You said, treat the universe in an ethical manner, and the universe will take care of you. Buckminster Fuller is the gentleman that said that. You have been so successful. Tell us about your story, and where did you get your attitude? And why did you decide you needed to write this book?
Well, I don't know where the attitude came from. I guess it came from my parents. But I've always believed that everything was going to be okay, and if I was a good person, things would work out. So far, it always has. My wife and I started a record chain, started a record store in Chapel Hill, North Carolina in 1963. And when we sold the company, we had 180 stores on nationally. So that was a really interesting ride. It was fun. We were around for the great time in the record business, and it was a wonderful thing. And we learned how to run a company from just starting with one store. And after that, a couple of years later, a partner and I we bought a company out of a bankruptcy called Bare Essentials, a cosmetics company, and built that into a worldwide brand. We recapitalized that a few years ago. So I've been involved with two major successes. And what I've learned out of that is if you treat people well, treat your employees well, that and you've got a good idea and work hard, it really works out.
I really enjoyed the second paragraph of the prologue, and I'm going to read it verbatim. In our society, and particularly in business, we're creating a huge group of jerks. We expect boorish, unethical behavior from business people, and this behavior is unacceptable. The world needs more ethical people. Whoever said that nice guys finish last was just another jerk trying to justify his existence. And I went, yes, that is so true. It is so discouraging when you have the scandals that go on like we're having today, and media hyping all of that stuff, and they're totally ignoring a lot of very solid, good individuals, such as yourself, that have built successful business, that are very much contributing to the economy. It's as if the hardworking middle class is being totally ignored. Is that one of the reasons why you decided you wanted to write this book?
Yeah, for a long time I've been talking about writing a book, and I finally said to myself, either write the thing or shut up. So I decided to write the book. I got tired of hearing myself talk about it. But what's happened recently is so distressing to me, this Main Street versus Wall Street, because it seems to me that business and Wall Street are pretty much the same thing. And there are an awful lot of really good folks running businesses in this country, and they've all gotten painted with the same brush. There are some unethical people, and there are obviously some greedy people who have done some awfully bad things. But there are an awful lot of great people running businesses who look out for everybody, look out for their customers and their employees, and they shouldn't be painted with the same brush.
In doing what you've done in writing this book, I think you hit so many significant points. And ethics, running business in the right way, this is so important. You are a multimillionaire. You have had two very, very successful business environments. You have always, you and your wife both, believed that if you take care of what's around you, you're going to have the support you need. If you hit hard times, and it can hit anybody at any time, then you're going to have what you need to get through it. And to me, when I was growing up, that seemed to be something that people expected. And that was the standard. That is what I was taught. That's what you were supposed to do. And yet it has evolved to this point where even Lee Iacocca said, I just don't know where the leaders are. Where are the people that we're supposed to admire? And with all of this, again, the stuff that's hit us, where so many, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have been affected by the attitudes, the unethical behavior, and the fact that it's even being tolerated the way it is. It's just really discouraging. But I believe, as you do, that things do come around, that it does end up getting you eventually, one way or the other. Now, you have some principles about making win-win deals. You say greed isn't good, screwing people over for the love of money. This is just not appropriate at all. Money clouds judgment. But you also believe there's plenty of money around. There's plenty for everybody. There'd be people that would argue with you on this point.
Well, my experience is, and this is just personal, and I know it doesn't reflect what a lot of people believe, is that I've always been pretty good at making money. But I never have worked to make money. For me, the fun of working and the fun of business was in doing it. And I liked the action. The money sort of followed. So I was never out there with the avowed purpose to make money. It just sort of came. And when kids ask me for advice, the first thing I tell them is, look, find something that you really like to do and go do that. Don't do something putting widgets in a hole just for money. Find something to do that you like. And you watch, you'll be successful, and money will follow you. So, the other thing that you just said, Donna, about that Lee Iacocca said, I don't agree with him. I think there are plenty of leaders around. And look at the person we've just elected president. I mean, look at that's impossible. He couldn't have become president in our society, and he did. And that's a heck of a leadership role model for everybody, I think.
Following orders is not an excuse for unethical behavior. I think that statement says quite a bit. And there are a lot of people that say, well, when you're given orders, you should just follow them. But I know personally people that worked for Washington Mutual that before everything hit the fan, so to speak, they left their jobs because they were being asked to lie. And when you know people, and you find out about things that are evolving and their discouragement of being in environments like this, sometimes that because like today we have such a concern about keeping jobs, they say, well, what do I do? And the truth is you have to make that decision yourself about ethical behavior. What would you tell someone if they were in a quandary like that, working in an environment where they were being asked to do what they felt was not right?
It's a very difficult conundrum, but I think that you've got to always choose the ethical course, and it's a hard thing to do. First of all, the following orders thing, that doesn't work very well. And the example I always give is Adolf Eichmann, who said, I was just following orders, and he got hung for it, so that didn't work for him. But I think it's a hard thing when you're with a company and you've got to decide where that ethical course is. But for me, it would be an easy choice. If I had to make that choice, I would make the choice. It might get me fired or it might hurt my career, but I would always make the ethical choice. And I think in the long term, that it's a style that works much better for the individual, and it certainly works better for the organization, the companies.
I think that's true. And I think many times situations evolve because nobody wants to say anything. And maybe one person is doing it, and they literally use other people as the scapegoats. Then when things start going wrong, they'll say, well, if that was the case, why didn't you say something? And it's an amazing drama that goes on. You make a statement, too, about what we're surrounded with and how we view the world internally is what makes a difference. And I agree with that 100%.
Well, it's the environment we grow up in, and it's what we're taught by our parents, and that's what we learn. That's how all of us learn. So if you want a failing in our society, I think it's a parental failing. Our parents have to teach us what's right and what's wrong and how we're going to exist in the world around us. And I think people who grow up and don't have those underpinnings from their parents, that's when our society gets in trouble.
I agree, I think. But it's society, there's just so many different levels in the social area, and I think it is the overall attitude and the support of all the environments. I know I've talked with people that said, gee, when I was growing up, there was the church we went to, the school had the same standards, everybody pretty much was on the same plate, and we couldn't get away with anything. If we did, we thought, gee, how did we manage that? Because everybody was paying attention. So we live in a very, very demanding world on many levels, but I think the old rules still do apply. You got to know Michael Jackson pretty well,
mm-hmm.
and you said that he was, in your book, one of the people that you felt a little sad about. Why?
Well, I thought, first of all, he's an incredibly talented person, and that talent brought him tremendous fame. I was at his house one time. He had a wall that was decoupaged with pictures of Michael Jackson and everybody in the world, the Pope, presidents, Gorbachev, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
They were up there with Michael Jackson. This guy had everything. And because of some things that I think happened in his childhood that really screwed him up, I mean, he basically is a shell of a person today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very sad because he's so talented and he's brought so much joy to so many of us. I think it's sad that he hasn't been rewarded psychically, emotionally for what he's done.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think there's a lot of people that would agree with you on that level. And with your having firsthand interaction with him and getting to know him as you did, it is a sad thing to watch because it just shows how money and fame, it's wonderful to have the abundance, but it doesn't make one happy. And that makes a full circle around what you said in the beginning. Don't go after the money in the sense of, gee, you want to be rich, that's great. But understand, if you're really involved with something that you love, you can have the joy and the pleasure and all the good things that go along with it. I really enjoyed your comments about your wife and how when you were doing the record business, your wife was the VP of Human Resources, and she had an M&M machine. And she always had people coming in, snacking. And she really knew a lot about the people that were there, and that was one of your wife's skills, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a guaranteed way to get people to come into her office and spend time and talk with her. But my wife and I, we're very fortunate. We've been married for 45 years. We had dated for 4 or 5 years before that. We're just two of these people who are supposed to be together. We're best friends. We've always been best friends. And we were always also business partners. And she's got a lot of business acumen, too. And she, well, for instance, she manages all our finances.
Mm-hmm.
She won't even let me near it. I'm not allowed to touch the checkbook. I can't be trusted. So, but when you have a partnership like that, it's terrific. It's a wonderful accompaniment. And if we could share our business, it made it so much more fun.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you bring out a number of points, and I think that your book, Nice Guys Finish First, really should be a read for just about anybody. I think it'd be good for young people to be able to read it, because you have this wonderful perspective of dealing with all kinds of personalities, various aspects of business, a real down-to-earth style, and you're very direct in the way that you write. But there's parts here that really you want the business person, the management person, to get. And you say, if management doesn't walk the walk that they're talking, they're not going to get the results out of the employees. Why do you think that's so hard for people to grasp?
Darn if I know. I don't understand it. It just seems reasonable to me that if you want that, companies owe loyalty to their people, and the people who work for companies owe loyalty back, and it has to go both ways. And I'm very tired of seeing some CEO standing at a podium announcing a layoff of 20,000 people, and everybody applauds, and the CEO looks like he's happy or something. I'd feel awfully bad about that, about changing 20,000 people's lives,
mm-hmm.
or 5,000 people, or five people. I mean, that's a terrible, terrible thing. And then Wall Street, and then the stock goes up. I mean, what is wrong with us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to have loyalty going both ways. I don't believe in layoffs. I don't believe that we should lay off people. I think business has to be more careful about who they hire.
Mm-hmm.
And when they hire, and hiring too many people.
Well, you bring up a point, and I think of one businessman that when he hit hard times, he had a very heart-to-heart talk with all of his employees. He didn't have 5,000. He had about 30. And he said, this is the situation. We are taking a severe cut in our salaries, all the executives are, and we have an option that we want you to consider. And what he did was make a proposal, and he said, you need to discuss it, and if you have any better ideas, let me know, but this is where we are. And everybody voluntarily went along with a cutback, but nobody lost their job. They all lost, all of them, including the executives. Again, the very thing you said, coming from the top, going all the way through. When they knew that the executives were going to be cutting their salaries in half, so that they would be able to pay the people that were working there, and then everybody else, their hours got cut back. They said, if you need to go find a part-time job, just go ahead and do it. But understand, as soon as we can get back to muster, we're going to be going back full-time. But this is where we are. And there wasn't one employee that was upset with that.
At our company, Record Bar, we did a lot of the same things. Well, all the top executives, when we got in trouble one time, all the top executives took pay cuts. And many of the departments, instead of having to lay off people, everybody took a pay cut also.
Mm-hmm.
So people will do that. They really will respond. And obviously, if you're going to do that, that shows great loyalty to a company.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that the company has loyalty to the employees.
I think that's very true. You bring up something that almost everyone at some time or another, if they're running a business of their own, they have to do, and that is firing someone. Boy, you are adamant. You have really specific attitudes about it. Tell us your positioning about firing people.
Well, I think if it's easy to fire somebody, there's nothing wrong with you. It's a terrible experience. I mean, it's terrible for everybody. So I had to do it a number of times because I, particularly at the first of my career, I wasn't very good at hiring the right people. So I had to change people a number of times. But it's a terrible experience. In my the way I tried to do it was I tried to make it as easy as I could for the person who I was firing. Because once you say you're fired, they're not going to hear anything else anyway. It's
mm-hmm.
not a good time to try to teach anybody something. So I would try to make it as easy as I could for them and conversely for myself. But it was a terrible experience, and I hope I never have to do it again.
Yes, and it's something that anyone I've ever known that has had to do it, that it just almost makes them ill. They don't like to do it. But there are those people that you know are either going to sabotage what you're doing, or they just plain don't fit. You've not hired the right person for the job.
Well, sometimes you just have to change people. For one reason or another, they just don't fit the organization. But I tell you, when I see Donald Trump on television saying, you're fired, and that's supposed to be entertainment, That just makes me sick.
Well, so much of that is just show business.
It is show business.
That's all, because that's, now maybe he would be that way in real life. I don't know.
Well,
he probably is,
but that's not a reality show to me.
Right, no, it isn't a reality show in my mind's book. Anyway, there is this positioning when you're hiring someone. You bring in some interesting thoughts that you say, usually you like to hire people that are like you. And I thought, gee, that makes sense. You know, you want somebody that mirrors back to you certain things. But you say diversity is better. Are you the person that did the hiring for your company, or did your wife do that?
Well, we all hired the people who were our direct reports.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who were going to work directly for me, I hired, and for my wife did the same thing, and for everybody else who was at a level to have people reporting to them, whether it was store managers or whomever. So what I understood, and it, for the first thing, when I got better at hiring people, I would get this intuitive hit of somebody
mm-hmm.
that I liked. And so I decided I was never going to hire anybody that I didn't like. And what I got was that they would work well with me. They would work well. I just, you know, I understood that pretty quickly. But the diversity I was talking about was, it made the organization much more interesting if we had more different kinds of people. They didn't all have to be exactly the same, but they had to understand the needs of the organization and want to do it. But at our company, at the record company, we had all kinds of strange people working for us who flourished in the environment because we didn't insist that everybody be stamped from the same cookie cutter.
And I think that's healthy. I really do. I think that diversification brings life into a business. And if you integrate that and you're not afraid of it, then you're going to find that you're going to have some idea people around that are going to be telling you, gee, pay attention to this. This is something that I just heard on the news or whatever. You can't be in all places at all times. You really need that. And in our fast-paced world today, especially with the technology that we now utilize in the communication capacity, I was reviewing material today about an industry that is going through such fast-paced changes that if you're not aware and you're not ready to move, you're going to be left in the dust. And it is happening in many different areas of life. But that doesn't mean things are going to totally disappear. They're just altering the way they're being done.
Well, I love creative people, and it's really fun having them around. But creative people oftentimes are left of center, so they're not the easiest people to manage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth some trouble to get the creativity, and it also made my life a lot more interesting.
I think so. Customer service is a very big thing for you, and I think it is absolutely so important. I was talking with someone just before the show who had an awful, awful experience with a major bank, and they said, I couldn't believe we had such and such an account for 20 years. And this is the way they treated us. They were furious, and they kept being literally made to go in circles, like running around on a hamster's wheel, without situations being resolved. This seems to be something that is coming more and more to the forefront. Customer service today is so important. It's not any less important than it ever has been. What's your stand on that?
Well, first of all, I can't understand why anybody would go in business and not give great customer service. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I learned it in a record store a long time ago, and I used to tell the people who worked for us, look, you got to be here all day anyway. If you're nice to people, they'll be nice back to you. If you're not nice, the chances are they won't be nice back to you. So it makes your own experience so much better. You'll just have so much more fun working since you got to be here anyway. So, I mean, that's just basic common sense. Plus, it's a style that works. The nicer you are to your customer and the happier they are with their experience, the better that the company's going to do. And it has to come from the top of a company. It's a demand. I can tell you when I walk in a retail store, no matter how many stores they have, whether the CEO demands that the people in the stores be nice to their customers. And in a bank or anything else, if you say, we're going to make our customers happy, you can tell when you go in a Nordstrom store that the people who run that company care about the customers.
Yeah,
because they insist that their people be nice. And it's that way a lot of times. And it can be that way even with something like an airline. All airlines don't have to be crummy to their passengers. Some of them are, but Southwest has certainly shown that you can run an airline and be really nice to your customers. And for the sad thing is that so often we remark on good customer service, and that should be the norm. That should be an everyday experience. But most of us only experience that once in a while. We hear these bad stories all the time, and that's very sad to me. I don't understand it.
Well, I think those that are savvy turn things around and really work at that, and then they end up taking away the business from their competitors because they're offering something quite exceptional. And I think people can be quite loyal. Interestingly enough, I think people enjoy being loyal to wherever they can get the service. But once you do something that is, they might try it a second time, maybe even a third time, but then you're dead in the water.
And those customers vote with their feet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever hear it. They just don't ever come back.
Right.
They're really the silent majority. They just don't ever come back.
You talk about how the way we present ourselves, it is a reflection of how we want other people to see us. And we need to think about that because people do observe this. And I have found this in working in the public eye, that if you don't have an interest in how you're presenting yourself, nobody else is really going to be able to see you as you want to be seen. This is very, very important. Why do you think people don't pay attention to it?
Well, or they don't really think about the outcome, what they're trying to do. In our stores, for instance, when we had record stores, everybody wanted to wear jeans and T-shirts, and that was great. I mean, that was the way I went to work. But if it was going to offend customers, we had to really think about what effect that was going to have. Obviously, we were trying to run stores, we were trying to sell records, so we wanted to give our people freedom to express themselves, but it couldn't be to the point of offending a customer. So there's a balance, and there's a balance for everybody because we create ourselves the way we want other people to see us. So if you create yourself in a way that an employer won't hire you, then you're just kidding yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important, and it's hard to get that across to some people because there are many individuals that say it doesn't make any difference. But it does. It really, really does. So I think the attitude of management permeates the entire organization. If there's that sense of pride, then it's going to be conveyed all the way down the line, because those that work for you want to be able to match that, because if they have pride in who they are and what they're doing and the company they're working for, it makes a difference. But it's on so many levels of life that really, really occurs. It took you 25 years plus to build your business Record Bar, and that ended up creating the wealth that you have been able to enjoy and then invest in the Bare Essentials. And I like how you said Bare Essentials was an overnight success after 14 years. Really made me chuckle with that one.
Well, it's my experience that it takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go A to D. You got to go A, B, C, D.
Mm-hmm.
And an awful lot of people, kids that I talk to, they want to be rich by next Thursday. And it really doesn't work that way. It takes some time. You have to nurture an idea and work with it. And then I have this theory. It's the theory of hanging around. If you hang around long enough, maybe something good will happen. But if you don't hang around, you won't be there when it happens. So the couple of times I've been involved in something that I sold and made a lot of money from, it took a long time to get there.
Yes, and I found that more often than not. Barry Bergman, your book, Nice Guys Finish First, is well worth reading. I like your direct approach, and I think that You've given a gift. You've got a legacy in this book that I think can be shared with a lot of people. Your website, if people want to find out more about you, is barrybergman.com. Am I correct?
Yes.
And
yes,
that's
with an IE. It's Barry with an IE.
Yes. Barrie Bergman, Bergman.
Right.
Barry, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a delight. Your book, Nice Guys Finish First, is a must-read, I think, for anybody, regardless of their age, who want to be successful in their own right. I think you give wonderful stories about the celebrities and the various experiences you've had. Thanks for being my guest.
It's been a pleasure, Donna. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Seaball. Hey, we're taking a break. We've got more good things to share with you. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTab Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories, you'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Seaball. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and hey, you're welcome to give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone numbers are toll-free, 877-876-5227, also 888-815-9756. If you're a first-time listener to the Donna Seaball Show, you're more than welcome to join us as often as you can, and if you'd like to call in, just know all I need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. So again, for this next half hour, 877-876-5227 and 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, my class, my goodness, it's hard to believe it's going to be coming up in just a couple of weeks. April the 25th, I'm going to be doing an all-day seminar from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m., and we are going to be serving lunch, by the way. It's going to be catered in. This is a seminar that I've titled Mind Vision, Powering Up Your Inner Giant. We're going to be working with this wonderful stuff that you might have inside of you that you perhaps kept and put away. It's going to enable you to perhaps look at some options for change, build the type of future you really want, and also expand your intuition, which is a marvelous, marvelous tool. So I hope that you'll join me, and if you are in the western area of Washington or anywhere else you want to come to it, all you need to do is call for reservation. Now, you can call me directly at 800-872-8852. You can also call for reservations at 253-383-3151. That's 253-383-3151. Now, the fee for the class, if you register prior to April 23rd, is $85. At the door, it will be $95. And it's at 206 North J Street, again, in Tacoma, Washington. We did this last year, and the class was fabulous. It was just absolutely great. So I'm doing it again this year, but we've got more additional information regarding the developing of your own intuitive skills, whatever they may be, and it is something obviously I have a passion for, but it's going to be very interactive, so you will be able to chat with me during that day where most people, you know, they're going, it's just not possible for them to do that with me otherwise. So it's a very reasonable fee for a day, including lunch, meeting with wonderful people, and having a chance to learn and grow and expand your own paradigm. So I invite you. And again, that's Mind Vision, April 25th, 10 to 4, at the Center for Spiritual Living. So give me a call if you want information, 800-872-8852 or 253-383-3151. Well, I have some fun facts of information, and I just really love to come up with some odds and ends of things. Do you know that a clam was found? It's called a quahog clam. I didn't even know such a clam existed. It's estimated to be more than 400 years old, and it was discovered in the waters off of Iceland in 2006. That's still there. Nobody's killed it. And it's amazing. When you think about these creatures of the sea, you're not aware of the fact that many of these different creatures can live for a very long time. I learned this when I was traveling up to Alaska. I got to know some fishermen. Little did I realize that halibut, which I knew after seeing some photographs of some that were almost 800 pounds, I knew that they grew pretty big. But in my ignorance, I just thought fish got big real fast. That's not the case. Halibut can live to be 50 or 60 years old, and actually maybe even longer than that. So the big ones, when they haul them out, they're taking out really, really mature fish. I didn't know that lobster can live to be over 100 years of age. Now, how did they find this out? Well, the halibut, apparently they can evaluate the scales on a halibut, and this is how they can determine the age of the fish. So when you think of sturgeon can live for an incredibly long time. Turtles have been known to live for well over 100 years. They actually don't know how long they can live. They just haven't a clue, because usually they're cleaned out. If people are in the area, they've often been used for food in the past. But they have a very long lifespan. So there's a lot of creatures that we are not aware that, if given the opportunity, will live a heck of a lot longer than we will. And this clam is one. Also, I wanted to share with you, oh, I know all of you that have had liposuction will hold this in your mind. I mean, this is really gross. This is a story, just a few sentences worth, because that's all you need, about Zoran Todorovic. Now, he is a Croatian, and he's a conceptual artist. He fed human fat and skin from liposuction clinics to visitors at his exhibition in Zagreb. Yeah. I mean, I wonder if he told them he did it before, you know, that he was going to do this. Yeah, it's awful. Anyhow, I couldn't pass that one up. That was just so disgusting. I think that's the word I'll use with it. And then, in 2004 April, there was a Chinese man arrested because he was suspected of stealing over 30 corpses from graveyards. And what he did, he was making soup from the corpses, from the flesh, and crushing the bones because he thought it might heal his sick wife. Yes. Now, these are all facts. This is out of Ripley's Believe It or Not. And you may think, oh, Donna, you're really reaching for it. But these are really, really facts. I've been a fan of Ripley's ever since I was a little girl. I just absolutely was intrigued with all of the information they were able to come up with. So, you know, it's just amazing. And when we think about the different species, if you're a person that's really interested in working with the environment and really want to be the green type of person, as so often is spoken of, we need to be aware about individuals that are illegally transporting creatures, whether they're reptiles, they're fish, whatever, from one country into another, because there's a tremendous black market for this. And in January of 2007, customs officials in Thailand found more than 1,400 turtles of various species and 33 Arapaima fish being smuggled out of the country in one suitcase. One suitcase. For these creatures to survive, it would be amazing. And I'm sure some of you have seen some of the shows on the birds and other creatures that are smuggled out of South America, different countries. It really is a sad thing because so many of these creatures are not going to survive the transport, much less the changing environment that they're going to be brought into. And many times when these animals, snakes, reptiles, whatever kind of creature, you know, fish, are introduced into different environments, they will produce problems that can affect the natural environment that they're brought into. And people have a bad habit of flushing things down the commode. Well, some sewer systems, that automatically is going to be a death knell for any creature. But depending on where it's done, lots of times those creatures will get out into systems. I can remember someone talking about being in an apartment and all of a sudden seeing a snake's head coming up through the commode. Wouldn't that make your day? Woohoo! Well, it's a true story. And they found that, and I think it was a boa constrictor that had somehow or another gotten into the piping system in this particular building and was feeding off of different things that would come through the water and just grew to a huge, huge length. And they finally were able to rescue the snake and find it a home or find it an environment that it could be in. But it's just amazing what happens. So speaking of that, again, you can call me if you want to chat, 877-876-5227, that's 877-876-5227, or 888-815-9756, that's 888-815-9756 if you'd like to chat with me today. I've got some interesting things about observation that I wanted to share with you today. And also, we may be sharing with you the recipe with chocolate. Oh, yes, the elixir of life. What do we want to say? There's so many wonderful words that can be associated with chocolate. It's just absolutely the food of the gods. Maybe that's what I should say. They talk about ambrosia. Forget that nonsense. We're going with chocolate. So I may have a chocolate recipe for you as well. We're going to be taking a break in a little bit. And just know you can call in and chat with me if you so desire. Also, I wanted to let you know that next Tuesday I'm going to be doing a special two-hour broadcast with a fellow broadcaster, Monica Chapman, and we are going to be together on her show, Walking with Spirit, on Achieve Radio. And you can do that on the Internet. It's AchieveRadio.com. You can listen to us live. And Monique and I are going to be talking about various things through the programming, and we invite you to come and be a part of the show if you so desire. That'll be on Tuesday, April the 14th from 5 until 7 p.m. Well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll be sharing a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and a recipe for chocolate. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, have you got that pad of paper and pen handy? I've got a recipe here for some chocolate fudge brownies that are just absolutely yummy. And if you want to have something that's just going to be extra special that you want to share with somebody, this is such an easy recipe, and it absolutely can, well, I don't know, just give that very special touch. And if you want to treat yourself, this is a great way to do it. And let me give you the ingredients here. You're going to need 7 ounces of low-fat cream cheese. 7 ounces of low-fat cream cheese. A half a teaspoon of vanilla extract. Half a teaspoon of vanilla extract. 2 eggs. 2 eggs. A cup and a quarter of superfine sugar. Cup and a quarter of superfine sugar. Half a cup of butter. 1/2 cup butter. 3 tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa. Go with the best. 3 tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa, 3/4 cup of self-rising flour, and you want to sift it. Well, 3/4 cup of self-rising flour sifted. And then 1 3/4 ounces of pecans, or your favorite nut, but pecans, try them first if you enjoy them, and you want to chop them up. And then there is a frosting you're going to want to put on the top, and this is the ingredients for, these are the ingredients for the frosting. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of milk, 1 tablespoon of milk, 1/2 cup of confectionery sugar, 1/2 cup of confectioner sugar, 2 tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa, 2 tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa, and if you want to decorate the top with nuts, have a few of those set aside. Now, this is how simple it is. It doesn't fix a huge amount. It's just perfect for, let's say, a few people. You can lightly grease and flour a shallow 8-inch square cake pan. 8-inch square cake pan. And then you want to beat together your low-fat cream cheese, your vanilla extract, and 5 teaspoons of the superfine sugar. And you want to whip that really good until it's really smooth, and you put that to the side. The next thing you're going to want to do is to beat your eggs and the remaining superfine sugar together until they're really light and fluffy. And using a mixer is the best way to go with this. And you want to put the butter and unsweetened cocoa in a small saucepan, and you want to heat it very gently, stirring until the butter melts and the mixture is well combined. Then, when you do that, you will let that cool for just a bit, and then little by little add it into the egg mixture. And you want to make sure that your cocoa and butter are not hot. You want it warm. not hot, because otherwise that egg is going to curdle on you. Then, after you've mixed that combination together, your cocoa, your butter, in with the eggs and the sugar, then you want to very gently fold in the flour and the chopped pecan. You don't want to beat it, you want to fold it. And then you'll take half of the brownie mixture, put it into the pan, level the surface, and then you'll take the soft cheese mixture that you've already beaten into a real smooth, easy blend. Then you want to take that and put it over the brownie mixture, and then you want to take the rest of your brownie combination and pour that over your cream cheese mixture. Then you're going to bake it in the oven at 350 degrees for about 40, 45 minutes, and then you want to let it cool in the pan. When you're ready to make your frosting, because it's going to take about an hour for it to cool, really cool thoroughly, you want to melt the butter, that 2 tablespoons of butter, in your milk, which is 1 tablespoon, and you could nuke it in the microwave if you want, just do it in 10-second intervals, and then stir in the sugar and the unsweetened cocoa, spread it over your brownies, and decorate it with pecans. Oh, it is so good. And then plan on running a 500-mile marathon after you eat it. Oh, it's so good. Well, what a way to go. Hi, we've got a caller. This is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, hon. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Yeah, C. Cheyenne, and I'm calling from North Carolina. Is that Raleigh?
From Raleigh. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, your voice is echoing, hon, so I don't
know. Okay.
I don't know what it is that it's doing that. We've got just a tiny bit of a time delay. So
okay.
All right, Diane, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is you're a planner. You really like making up lists, to-do lists, and I would like to make one suggestion. Put them on a bigger piece of paper because you're so frustrated that you're only getting maybe, if you're lucky, an 8th of your to-do list done.
Yes.
That's okay. It's that consistency of following through, and I think knowing how to shift the priorities. But let's face it, it's an ongoing list. It will never end, but you need a bigger piece of paper. When you get it done, have a nice big fat pen that you can go and say, yes, that's off. Yes, so that you will give yourself credit for what you have accomplished. There's a lot going on in your life, and you, in a way, are running away from what you know you really need to pay attention to because you're scared. And I don't know if this has to do with expanding your positioning, let's say, in a professional environment or some community involvement, but it's like you're needing to go to the next level, hon, and you're really scared, and so you keep sabotaging yourself.
Yeah, there's been where I keep on getting offers for certain things. I'm just kind of like, I don't know if I'm ready for that yet because it's going to take time away from my daughter, but yeah.
Well, why don't you look at it a little differently? Instead of taking it that from that positioning, if someone said to you, gee, I want you to be the international representative for my chocolate chip cookies, and you go, oh, what would that entail? Well, you'd be flying to Italy or you'd be flying to South America. And, of course, this is just, you know, I'm making this up as I go along. But you say, oh, no, oh, gee whiz, I wouldn't be able to do that because, I you know, instantly you're looking at what you can't do instead of looking at what you can do. And what I encourage you to do is to look at it from a different positioning. Say, I'm interested in what you have to say. Tell me more. And don't make any judgments. And say, may I think about this? Step away from the high pressure. And then go and ask yourself, well, what did I not ask? You know, what do I need to know about this? It's easy for somebody to give a whole bunch of good information. And if you can do that, then you can go back to them and say, this is really intriguing. Would I be able to have a 3-day week, work week or a 4-day work week?
Yeah.
What are my options? And you find out more, and then you make the judgment. Hon, I'm sorry to have to cut you short like this because we are out of time just about.
Oh, thanks so much, though.
I hope that helps you. And
it did.
You didn't have an opportunity to even ask a question. So give me a call back, Diane.
And, thank you.
You know, I'll be back tomorrow or whenever you have a chance to call in. But give me a call back and I'll take your question. Just remind me we didn't have a chance to do that.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome, hon. Thanks for calling in and tell your friends about the show.
I will.
All right, Diane. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we're out of time. It goes by so fast. Well, that's what happens when you have nice guests and you've got nice people to talk with and fun things to share, including chocolate. You never can beat that. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about attitudes of gratitude. Join me because MJ Ryan is a great gal. You'll really like her. This is Donna. You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. See you tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna Siebel. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.